Welcome to Pop Culture Happy Hour. Sunday night, the Philadelphia Eagles won their first Super Bowl ever. Justin Timberlake invoked the memory of Prince, and Dodge invoked the words of Martin Luther King Jr. to sell Ram trucks.
Now that it's Monday morning, we're ready to talk about the good, the bad, and one very key sacking of Tom Brady. I'm Stephen Thompson.
And I'm Linda Holmes. We're summing up our Super Bowl thoughts on this episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour, so stick around.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Starbucks. For the past 43 years, Starbucks has served their bold signature espresso. But for the first time ever, they're introducing a second espresso, Starbucks Blonde Espresso. It's smooth and subtly sweet. So whatever your drink is, from a flat white to an iced Americano, try it with Starbucks Blonde Espresso. And as always, you can order ahead on your Starbucks app.
You've met me and Stephen Thompson, and with us in the studio is noted New Orleans Saints fan Katie Presley, lucky enough not to have a dog in this particular fight. Welcome, Katie.
Who dat?
And of course, we could not do this show without our dear pal, the man I suspect has not slept a great deal between the end of the Super Bowl and his arrival at the studio this morning, longtime Philadelphia Eagles fan, Gene Demby.
Go Birds. Let's get it.
How's the morning?
It feels amazing. Did it feel this good when the Saints won?
Yes.
I was surprised. I was like, oh, it'll be nice if they win. Yeah. I wanted to go home and be home with my family and like be in the city and feel the electricity, but honestly, like one of the most joyful experiences I've ever had. It was so much fun.
So you were in Philadelphia, and you went out after, right?
Yeah.
You went out,
you
poured out.
Did you climb
out
any greased poles?
No, I did not.
So we have to talk about the actual game. Mm-hmm. It was the Patriots versus the Eagles. The Patriots are kind of the ultimate overdog in football. And this game, as it got toward, you know, it had kind of a natural rhythm to it. The Eagles were ahead a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. But then in the later part of the game, the Patriots sort of began to come back and
as they do,
make
as
a
they
push
always do.
As they do. Mm-hmm. And then it was coming down to this thing where the Eagles were up by, what, 5? Mm-hmm. And with a couple minutes left. And it seemed perfectly set up for Tom Brady to just charge down the field, have a miraculous touchdown, break everybody's hearts.
And except Giselle's.
Exactly. Except his beautiful wife and children. And then ruin the Super Bowl for me personally, and I am sure. And I should point out, ruin this taping. Because if we were dealing with Demby in mourning, this would be a very different podcast. But instead, with a couple minutes left, as Tom Brady was attempting to march down the field, this happened.
Uh-oh. Brady gets hit, the ball is out, and Philadelphia has it.
That strip sack was the first time I really believed that maybe this was going to happen.
The sound of the Super Bowl can be summarized by the opening of that clip. This is a new ball game.
Yeah.
The people I was watching with, I think we all blacked out. Like, as soon as the ball came out of Brady's hand.
Fugue state.
Was like, I don't think I saw the next 10 seconds. We were just jumping up and down. Like,
the people I was with, we kept checking your Twitter feed to see how you were doing. And there was one point where it was just like,
It's weird. I don't know what's more stressful, though, sitting next to a pessimist or sitting next to an optimist. Mm-hmm. Because Sam Sanders, who was sitting next to me for much of this, was just like, they're going to win. The Eagles are going to win. The Eagles just won the game. And I'm like, no, that's not what's going to happen. Because I'm the sports pessimist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. You know what's weird is like, it seemed like everyone who was not a Patriots fan in America was rooting for the Eagles, right? And if it was another matchup where the Eagles versus someone else, I think there would have been a lot more animosity in the Eagles direction. Because our fans are obnoxious. there's a bunch of reasons to dislike Philly fans. But the Patriots are so widely loathed. They're like the symbol of, someone called them the Death Star, but that might be like too flattering a characterization.
The Death Star had cool technology.
Absolutely.
Honestly, it's enough for me that they've just won a lot.
Yeah.
I never just want the same thing to happen in sports over and over and over. Yeah. I don't think it's good for sports. So that plus the fact that, you know, when I was a kid, the Eagles were my hometown team.
Right, that's right. Mm-hmm.
And they're your hometown team. Mm-hmm. And that was enough.
If I may pitch an incredibly enfeebled defense of the Patriots for one second.
Try it.
I'm going to try. Here's what I'm going to say for the Patriots. They've played 8 Super Bowls in the Tom Brady and Bill Belichick
era. That is an insane number.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I think all 8 of those Super Bowls have been really good games.
Yeah, they have been.
The Patriots, I don't think, have ever actually blown anyone out in the Super Bowl. And they've, when they've lost to the Giants both times until last night, when they've lost, they've been like shocking surprises, shocking upsets, including one where they were undefeated all season until the Super Bowl. And when they've won, they've either been like thrilling come from behind games like against the Falcons or that wild back and forth against the Panthers a few years back. They are an exciting team to watch in the Super Bowl, in part because they're not necessarily built to crush and dominate. They're just built to eke it out in this kind of methodical,
I was just going to say methodical,
agonizing, miserable.
Because Brady's unflappable, and that's their secret, is like the game can look like whatever it's going to look like, and he will, as you said, Linda, march down the field. And even as, like, I saw him, he was shook at approximately one point in the entire end of the game, and I was like, oh, I think that look on his face is fear.
The look on Steven's face all the time.
It does not compute. But that's what they can rely on from him, is like, we're still going to get this because I'm a machine and my arm is a magnet. And like, I'm going to make it. Exactly. Beep, and, boop, boop, boop.
And they tried a kind of a cute thing at one point where they tried to throw to him.
Yes.
And I sort of felt like that's not your brand.
Nope.
Like, exactly like you're saying, their brand is how methodical they are. And their brand is how kind of solid they are. You know, I mean, I'm sure it wasn't meant to be cute exactly, but you know what I mean by cute in the context of sports.
Element of surprise.
It was a gadget.
Exactly. It was a exactly.
And Tom Brady drops the pass. And then the Eagles score a touchdown on the same gadget play in which the quarterback becomes the receiver. Oh, it was beautiful.
And Gene, I mean, tell us about Nick Foles, because this really is, this guy was nobody. This was a mediocre backup quarterback who took over for Carson Wentz, your actually great young quarterback.
Would have been the MVP, probably.
The future of the, considered like one of the future of the league type players. Nick Foles, who'd been kind of bouncing around the league as like a very minor player, suddenly just took off like a jet.
You know what he did? He Matt Saracened.
He was QB, QB2. Wait, what was I going to say? QB7?
Yeah,
QB1.
He became QB1.
So Shankar Vedantam of Hidden Brain and I are both Eagles fans. We like check on each other every Monday morning. I've been watching the games with him for the second half of the season, close to the playoffs. And as soon as Wentz went down, we're like, okay,
season
it was fun.
It's been
fun. Look what happened to the Packers when Aaron Rodgers
absolutely,
went
absolutely. Yeah. Like your season, I mean, quarterbacks are so important, right? And so we're like, okay, the season's over. It was fun. We have a great future to look forward to because Wentz is amazing. And Foles looked good in some games and shaky in others. And the playoffs, he just looked, I mean, the last 2 weeks, he looked amazing. It's like some of the throws he made yesterday were like, I cannot believe he attempted that throw.
Exactly.
They had a really interesting statistic at one point that said it was the most yards in any NFL game.
So during the course of like the late third quarter into the fourth quarter, they kept putting up a statistic. And the first one was most yards ever compiled in a Super Bowl. And that was like halfway through
like
the third
quarter. Like between both teams. So like both teams were really like marching and moving.
Then a ways into the fourth quarter, it was like, this is the most yards ever put up in a postseason game. At which point I was like, whoa. And by the end, literally like right before the Hail Mary at the end of the game, they said, this is the most yards ever compiled in any NFL game, postseason or regular season.
How was that possible?
And it brings up, like, first, now, there are people who love a defensive struggle, but a lot of people, like, they like to see points scored.
Yeah.
I like seeing points scored. And this was genuinely one of the best football games I've ever seen.
So one thing I want to ask you, Gene, is you had said going into this, I had seen you say somewhere that your relationship with football has become fraught, as a lot of people's has, for economic reasons and health reasons and all those reasons. And that one thing that you could do was kind of like seal it up with winning the Super Bowl and then move on.
From football.
From football.
From NFL football. How are you feeling today? I mean, I think this is not the right moment to decide.
He's vibrating. Let's paint pictures with words here. He's vibrating.
I mean, there's a way in which, not to get all dark here, that the NFL is like sort of an unsustainable enterprise. I don't think it will disappear. Obviously, 100 million people watch the Super Bowl. But there's a way in which the NFL is like on the clock now. I think there's a way in which it will become it will recede from being the most popular sport in America, followed by college football, which is the second most popular spectator sport in America, because of stuff like this, because of the way, like, labor, the sort of relationship that the league has to its players who are injured. Watching the game yesterday was, like, so satisfying because when the Eagles won the Super Bowl last, they played the Bill Belichick-led, Tom Brady-led Patriots in 2004, 2005. And that was only, you know, 13 years ago, but none of those players are still in the league. Like, none of those players are still in the league. And that's because football careers are really short. I bet you there's a dozen players from that season, maybe, who are around. And I bet you they're all kickers, the people who don't get hit. When people talk about this, ESPN kicked, like, sort of ended their SportsCenter broadcast yesterday by saying, the Eagles could just be getting started. All their players are under contract. And they have this, like, bright future ahead of them. What we were saying about the Seahawks a couple years ago.
Right.
And
right.
What happens is people get injured because this game is violent.
Yeah.
And people get old really quickly. And when we say old, we mean they're 27, right? There's a way in which I think this will be as good as it gets as an Eagles fan, because I don't think any of this, I don't think, there's a reason teams don't repeat, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a reason, like, there's, the game is so brutal that I can't imagine watching it as a spectator. But also, it also makes it impossible to, like, to replicate things like this,
mm-hmm.
which is one reason the Patriots are so amazing.
Yes.
But also, I don't think the Eagles' excellence is sustainable, but I also don't think football as an enterprise is sustainable.
Yeah.
Agreed.
I do want to talk a little bit about the halftime show.
People had thoughts.
You know, so Justin Timberlake did the halftime show. The brief version of the history is that years ago, Justin Timberlake and Janet Jackson did the halftime show. He actually was appearing in her halftime show, and her breast was exposed for about half a second, I want to say, and it led to a big hubbub. And neither one of them has been back to the Super Bowl since, until this. And of course, he came back and she didn't. And I think whatever you think about how that came to be, that incident, the fact that she has seen much, much, much greater consequences for it than he has is pretty indefensible. So he was kind of coming in with, I think, people feeling like, you know, like uncomfortable with that.
Mm-hmm.
Then came this story that they were going to do, because it was in Minneapolis, they were going to do a Prince tribute that originally the rumor was it was going to be a Prince hologram.
Nope.
Like Will.i.am on election night or whatever it is. There was going to be a Prince hologram, and then it wasn't going to be. And as it turned out, it was Prince projected on a white, kind of a billowing sheet. But again, kind of involuntarily pulled into a duet with Justin Timberlake that he didn't sign up for, which, you know, he had talked Prince during his lifetime about not being into these fake duets.
I mean, I was just going to say, like, Prince was super chill about uses of his likeness.
Right.
He was famously,
Game for whatever.
Yeah. It felt to me like, I mean, it wasn't a hologram. And there was a little moment when they had set up a thing where a bunch of lights, a bunch of downtown Minneapolis, I guess, had been rigged to light up purple in the shape of Prince's symbol. And I thought that was lovely. That part was really nice. Minneapolis legitimately, like, loves Prince.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a fair thing to pay tribute to. But for Justin Timberlake, man. Gene, what do you think?
Like, the performance itself was kind of like meh. Like,
It really was hard meh.
It seemed sort of phoned in. I don't know. What did you guys think?
That's exactly how I felt. So I'm coming into this having been a diehard NSYNC fan. They are exactly of my era.
Who was your favorite?
Justin.
Okay.
The star.
Mm-hmm.
I came in also deeply frustrated by the Janet Jackson debacle and the way that quote unquote justice was doled out between the two of them, betwixt them.
Mm-hmm.
But I also have not been impressed with Justin's music for the last several years. I think he's a singles-driven guy. He's like a pageant kid, you know? He was on Star Search when he was 11 years old with a country name. Like, he was Justin Randall. I look at him and I see a kid whose life has shunted him into this path of performitude. And he, like, does not know about the world. This is like a performance boy in the bubble. So he comes in, and I'm like, does he think the Trolls song is a jam or not? Because, like, I'm already I was realizing it as he started to play. I was like, what are the five songs that he's going to sample from that would make this an amazing performance? Mm-hmm. He doesn't have them. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have mm-hmm. five songs that like completely stand the test of time. Yeah. And because he's a machine, he's like Tom Brady, y'all. Parallels abound.
Interesting, interesting.
There's no cohesion. So Beyonce's performance was so cohesive. She did the same, like sampling from bits, but she managed to make it seem like she's had a plan since she was 12 years old. Like,
I think that's because she has.
Well, sure. And right, she's been writing her music for longer. That makes all the difference. So Justin Timberlake bounces from like Rock Your Body to
Cry Me a River.
And these songs are like, you know, they popped when they happened, but I'm listening to them like, oh my God, that's what you have to show for this? Mm-hmm. You've been doing this since you were 11? Mm-hmm. And then the Prince thing happens, and he follows the Prince thing up with two of his songs. Like, you gotta end on Prince. They turned Minneapolis purple. You're done.
And then
Get
he comes back with
stage.
Like, can't stop the feeling. Troll colors.
Even better, he comes back with Mirrors, which is a song about being in love with someone because they do a great job of letting you look at yourself more. The Super Bowl, that was the television magic, was like flashing mirrors. That was the prettiest thing he did. And I was like, they turned Minneapolis purple.
You're done.
Get out. And then he ends it on Trolls and that
and
hilariously awkward selfie kid. Oh my God.
That kid didn't sign up for that though. He just got conscripted into that.
The other thing I thought was interesting about it was Justin Timberlake, I think he is a good showman in sort of the way Bruno Mars is, but not the same way Bruno Mars. Like, they are both people it is fun to watch perform in exactly the right set of circumstances. But I don't think that Justin Timberlake has all that much going for him musically except geniality. I think that's one of the reasons why he has done really well with a certain audience. That's why he has that bro-itude with Jimmy Fallon.
Right.
And if you look back to how much it hurt Jimmy Fallon when people perceived him to have been overly friendly with Donald Trump, which was his geniality kind of applied in a situation where it made people uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I think Justin Timberlake, when he comes out in a circumstance where people feel uncomfortable with him because of the Janet Jackson stuff and uncomfortable with him because of the Prince stuff, there's not a lot to kind of bring you back around in that way that certain people, even when you kind of don't like them, once you see them perform, you're like, no, look, you can't argue with that. I don't think this was that kind of performance. The costumes were kind of drab and weird.
They were weird.
The
sound
mix was terrible.
The sound mix was terrible,
which we've talked about this before. Everybody always dumps on the sound mix at the Super Bowl, and maybe there's nothing you can do about it. But the NFL actually posted that entire halftime show on YouTube. And if you go back, it's not just that I was in a room trying to watch it on a TV. It sounds terrible. Mm-hmm. It doesn't sound good. His vocal wasn't loud enough. A lot of times the vocal was kind of lost. Mm-hmm. It just didn't come together for me in the way that, like, you know, my favorite Justin Timberlake might be the one doing the history of rap with Jimmy Fallon, which is a curious thing to realize about your affection for Justin Timberlake. Before we go, I do want to touch a little bit on ads, which we talk about every year because gazillions and squillions of dollars are poured into them. The things that I noticed were, first of all, they decided to drop a Cloverfield movie on Netflix right after the Super Bowl that had been unannounced. Mm-hmm. And I have not seen it yet. The reviews have not been positive that I have seen so far. But they announced it. I will say it's an interesting strategy. It is something made possible by the Netflix streaming model, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, and maybe it undercuts some of NBC's own post-game programming, the big This Is Us. What's going on with Jack and the Fire?
Yeah.
But, I mean, ad-wise, it seemed like there were a couple that really popped, but that largely a lot of money was spent for very little. I think the recurring Tide ads with David Harbour from Stranger Things were cute and kind of not only tapped into a lot of like Super Bowl commercial tropes, but were able to tie in with other Procter & Gamble products in a clever way. Mm-hmm. They brought back Isaiah Mustafa from the Old Spice commercials that I know, Linda, you love.
Hello again, ladies. Is your man the kind of man who would climb the height? I'm in a Tide ad.
Nice pants.
They were funny. I mean, David Harbour is a funny, charming dude. Mm-hmm. And those coaxed, I thought, a lot of goodwill. Though, it should be noted, they spent millions and not just like a Super Bowl ad costs $5 million. Those ads cost like $15 million, not even counting just for the ad buy, not counting how much they cost to make.
Yeah.
Similarly, the Australia ads, where it turns out that this Crocodile Dundee movie that we've been hearing about is really like an ad for like go
visit Australia.
Visit Australia, mate.
Where life is a Crocodile Dundee movie.
Exactly. Yeah. And the Amazon Alexa thing where they brought in celebrities to do the Alexa voice, that's a 90-second ad. Mm-hmm. So it seems like the ads that popped, the secret to having your ad stand out is to spend the most possible money.
Yeah. It does seem that way. And I want to mention one other one, which
I'll
was
bet you do.
I mentioned this in the intro. The Dodge Ram trucks ad featuring the voice of Martin Luther King Jr. Now, I am not in charge of that state. It is not my job to necessarily decide what voices should be used for and not used for. But it is curious to me, given how tightly his estate controls, you know, use of voice. I was really surprised to see it turn up in a Dodge Ram truck ad.
Ava DuVernay famously could not use any of Martin Luther King's speeches in Selma. His estate would not grant her permission to use those speeches.
But Selma, I mean, that's a commercial enterprise.
That's Hollywood.
And this is a whole different conversation, but like there's a way in which Martin Luther King has been sort of like Santa Claus. He's become like a Santa Claus figure.
Yeah.
And it's like to use him in this way, right, to sell trucks. It felt so gross.
Yeah.
And it probably won't matter.
Yeah. It's very, between the Prince thing and that commercial, there just was a lot to think about in terms of like all the stuff that went on politically with the NFL this year. And like, there's something about seeing the ghostly use of both Martin Luther King Jr. and Prince on the same night.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, Gene's team won.
Yes. That's what ultimately matters.
And Philadelphia is a great city. And I'm happy for the Eagles. And I'm happy for you. And I told everybody last night, I said, I just want this for Gene.
Yep. I'm so happy.
So that brings us to the end of our show. Let us know what you thought about the Super Bowl. You can tweet at us at PCHH or find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH. And you can follow Gene Demby at GEEDEE215. And you can follow Katie Presley at Love Is Maroon. Thank you so much for being with us, you guys. Thanks to all of you for listening again. And we will see you right back here on Friday.
You have access to the entire world of NPR with your smart speaker. Ask it to play NPR to check the news while you get ready for work or fix dinner. There's a new radio in your house, and it's easier than ever to listen to Morning Edition, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and more. Ask your smart speaker to play NPR.